Are riots the new normal in America, or at least during this age of Donald Trump as president? Hello, and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Right now, our guest is Bill Federer, who's a best-selling author. His works are all available at AmericanMinute.com. Bill, welcome back to the program.
Jerry, great to be with you.
All right, I'm sure you've noticed all these different rioters in the streets. And this is abnormal. I mean, this just is not the way life is normally. It's almost as if some people are unhappy with the election results, and they're proving it by marching down the streets, and in some cases breaking windows as they march down the streets.
Right. Well, this is a tactic, and it goes all the way back to ancient Israel, ancient Rome, ancient Greece, where you pay rioters. You pay people to do riotous things, and your goal is to take over the country. I mentioned Israel. If you remember, Israel was a republic. They had no king for 400 years, and they had somebody that wanted to take it over. His name was Abimelech. Who was he? He was a illegitimate son of Gideon, and the story is he goes to a city of Shechem, and he agitates unrest, and he tells the people, why don't you have me be a ruler instead of Gideon's sons? And he goes to the temple of Baal Berith and takes 70 pieces of silver and hires vain and worthless persons to do what? To riot and murder all of his half-brothers, the sons of Gideon. And then he makes himself king. And, you know, would have continued had not somebody dropped a millstone on his neck when he was attacking a castle. Anyway, we look at Athens. Athens had a city-state, and it was a democracy. The people ruled it. And it went on for several hundred years until Philip of Macedon, he was the father of Alexander the Great. He had conquered a city, Amphipolis, and anyway, he took gold from that city, and he bribed citizens of Athens with money under the table to cause unrest and disunity, and that they eventually were able to gather around themselves useful idiots that were followers, and it so divided Athens that Philip was able to come in and take over. So you take money and you bribe citizens to betray their city.
When you say Philip, you're talking about the father of Alexander the Great?
Father of Alexander the Great.
Yeah. Okay. Huh.
And then we fast forward a couple more hundred years and get to Rome. Rome was a republic with 600 senators. Over the years, they gravitated into three parties headed up by Caesar, Pompey, and Crassus. They formed a little agreement called the Triumvirate. Well, Crassus dies, and it turns into a tug-of-war between Caesar and Pompey.
And the Caesar here is Julius. Julius Caesar. Yeah, go ahead.
Julius Caesar. And Pompey has money. Caesar does not. And so what does Julius Caesar do? He raids the federal treasury, the Temple of Saturn, and takes 400 years of stored-up Roman gold and uses it to buy supporters against his political opponent, Pompey. Right, so you get, you take money and you buy people who you can. So Caesar said, "Use money to get men. Use men to get money." And we fast forward again to Machiavelli. Machiavelli lived 500 years ago in Italy. Italy was a bunch of city states: Venice, Genoa, Naples, Florence, Siena, and they all had armies and navies and fought. And so Machiavelli thought, if one prince could control all of Italy, it would stop the infighting. So he writes a book called The Prince, where he advocates the ends justifies the means, the end of one prince controlling all of Italy. It's such a good end, because it'll stop this infighting, that any means necessary to get there is justified. Lie, cheat, steal. So if a prince conquers a city, the people would hate him. But if the prince pays agitators and rioters and creates crises and all kinds of problems, the people will cry out for help. And the prince will come in and get rid of the very people he bribed. Nobody would know the better for it. And everyone would praise the prince as a hero. So it's actually good marketing. You create the need and fill it.
And it's evil.
You go around the back. Very evil. You go around the back of the house and set it on fire. And then you go around the front of the house and sell them a fire extinguisher, and they'll pay anything for it, and they'll even thank you for being there. So it's called Machiavellianism, where you create or capitalize on a crisis to consolidate control. So you've got Abimelech paying a vain and worthless person to murder. You've got Philip of Macedon paying people to betray their city. You've got Julius Caesar raiding the federal treasury to pay people to defeat Pompey. You got Machiavelli and this prince and the idea that it's okay to pay people to riot and create domestic crises because your end is good. And then if I have a minute or two, I'll tell you about Hegel.
Oh, well, how about if you bring us up to modern America, since I think you've absolutely established some incredible examples there. But what about it today? Where does this apply to today in modern America?
Well, one person that's a good segue is Hegel. So Napoleon conquers Prussia, you know, parts of Germany. And the king says, well, we can't let that happen again. We've got to strengthen the state. So Hegel provides the philosophy. It's called Hegelian dialectics.
It's called the what?
Triangle. Hegelian dialectics.
Okay.
And it's a triangle. One corner is a thesis. The opposite corner is an antithesis or antithesis. And the top corner is a synthesis. It sounds complicated, but it's not. In other words, you start off at the first corner. You create the opposite. You create an antithesis. In other words, you create a problem that's real bad, and then everybody's happy to settle for your answer that's half as bad, right? The synthesis. Then that becomes the new starting point. Then you create another problem that's real bad, and everybody's happy to settle for your answer that's half as bad. And you keep doing this till you move across the page from the people ruling themselves back to a king. Karl Marx took this and applied it to politics and said, how do you create an antithesis? How do you create a really bad problem? Well, you send in agitators, agent provocateurs, provoking agents, community organizers, labor organizers. Their job is to find the fault lines and tension lines in a society and find the people with grievances and stir them up until they riot and there's random bloodshed, and everybody is willing to have some strong leader come in and restore order to stop the killing. And so 45 countries fell to communism this way. Now, it works best if the people are not Christian that you're stirring up. Because even Napoleon said, religion is what keeps the poor from murdering the rich. So if you get rid of religion, Christianity, all you got is raw human passion. And you say, you want what they have. You've been wronged. You've got grievances. Follow me. We'll ride it. And so they would organize the proletariat against the bourgeois, which is the working class against the business owners. They would organize the blacks against the whites, the Muslims against the Christians, the Hutus against the Tutsis in the Congo and Rwanda. They really do not care who the two sides are, and they don't care what the issues or the grievances are. Their goal is a destabilizing crisis with random violence and bloodshed that's so bad everyone is willing to surrender their freedoms to the state, to somebody that promises to fix it. And that's how you have these communist dictators took over 45 countries. Now, bringing it up to present,
yeah,
this all inspired Saul Alinsky. Who was Saul Alinsky? He rode around with Al Capone's hitmen in Chicago, Frank Nitti, and saw how all you had to do was kill a few people, smash a few windows, and the whole neighborhood would be terrorized and would quickly surrender their freedoms to the mob and pay extortion protection money in order to not have the killings continue. So Saul Alinsky applied this to politics, and he says a community organizer's job is to rub raw the resentment of the people of a community. Mm-hmm. The community organizer's job is to fan the flames of hostility to the point of overt expression. He must stir up dissatisfaction and discontent. He must seek out controversy rather than avoid it. For unless there is controversy, the people are not motivated enough to act. So what do? You got to find agitators. You got to find people that you can pay to create a crisis, to create an antithesis. And you can pay them, right? So like Abimelech and like Philip of Macedon and like Julius Caesar and Machiavelli and then, Karl Marx. And so this is what we're seeing. Hillary Clinton did her senior thesis at Wellesley College on Saul Alinsky. And President Obama was a Saul Alinsky community organizer in Chicago. And so these are the politics that have been playing out, the intentional creating of crises. Now, I lived a half an hour from Ferguson, Missouri. 99% of the people rioting were not from Ferguson. They were brought in. They even advertised in the Chicago newspapers, come to Missouri and join more Missourians organizing for reform and empowerment.
Were some of them paid?
Yes.
To agitate.
Snopes acknowledged that they received $30 million. What? And after their rioting, they started a cut the check campaign because the rioters weren't getting paid. And it made the news in St. Louis. I don't know if it made it nationally, but WMD.com carried a couple of national articles.
Was that George Soros money?
Correct. They were demonstrating in front of the Moore offices saying, and this local press in St. Louis picked it up, you promised us $5,000 if we would riot for a couple of weeks. We did our part and rioted. Now cut the check.
Wow.
They have their campaign, cut the check, hashtag.
Yeah.
And so these are paid rioters, the same people they moved to Baltimore to riot. It was a rent-a-mob. And then they began to do it all across the country. So
All right. Now, wait. I'm sorry for interrupting. We only have about 3 minutes left, and so we have a lot of loose ends to tie up here. But let me just say this. March 4, 1797 was a red-letter day in world history, and most people don't think about it. That was the day that our first president under the Constitution, George Washington, stepped down from the throne, if you will, or the presidency, and John Adams became our president. Now, normally we've had a peaceful transition, but in the last 2 months, it seems as if the transition between President Obama to President Trump has not been peaceful. And you could see what happened about a month ago in Berkeley, where, students protesting turned violent, and at least as far as destruction of property and so forth. This is bizarre. Is this the new normal? What's going on, Bill? We have about two and a half minutes to wrap up.
Well, number one, they're being paid to create the crises. Had we not had this reprieve of the current president, their agenda is to create these crises as an excuse for the government to come in. And then they'll ultimately have a global government. They're creating these crises internationally with these immigrants coming into countries. But I don't have time to explain all that, but I do want to bring up something. Psychological projection. Psychological projection. What's that? Sigmund Freud describes it. It's where a rude person accuses everybody else of being rude. That somebody with a negative quality wants to imprint that and blame others. So it's called blame shifting, where the attacker blames the victim. And so you have wife beaters will do this. They'll beat up their little wife. Well, you provoked me. It's your fault. And aggressor nations will do this. Yeah. Use some little pretenses.
Okay, got it. Projection.
So
excellent.
So what happens is you have these rioters accusing Trump and others of being intolerant when they're actually the intolerant ones. They have those accusing of being racist when they're actually the racist ones.
Right, right.
Islam is really good at this. They'll accuse a host community of being intolerant whenever they come in, they're intolerant of the other people.
Right.
So this is a tactic. It's important for us to understand that whenever you read headlines of accusations being thrown out against, the current administration or anybody, look at the person throwing out the accusations. They're usually the one guilty of it. Southern Poverty, Center, whatever, they're calling all these groups hateful. They're the ones that are stirring up the hate. It's very important to understand the psychological projection tactic.
Okay, so we have about half a minute left. A lot of loose ends. Go ahead. And the rioting in the streets, is that the new normal in America?
It is, unless we hurry up and get the gospel out there and get people involved. I just did a brand new book called Who is the King in America? Republic is the people are king. Ruling through representatives.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the people need to wake up and realize that you don't just have the right to vote in America. You're going to be held accountable to God for what happens.
Mm.
This is our country. You pledge allegiance to the Republic. You're pledging allegiance to you being in charge. If we sit back, there are those. This is a global agenda. It's the same power of Babel, Nimrod, Genghis Khan, Attila the Hun. The same lust for power doesn't want to give it up.
Yeah.
It was a miracle that we got those people out of office, but this is global power that they're after. And Jesus said this kind comes out only by prayer and fasting. This is a real serious thing.
Yeah.
If they ever get back in, they will be in with a vengeance, and All of those that hold normal traditional values will be criminalized. It'll be serious.
And it's a spiritual battle. AmericanMinute.com for more information. Bill Federer, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. God bless you.
Thank you, Jerry.
All right, bye-bye.